views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. T, if you want to get us started.
Can you hear me? Yes, so welcome to Codebreaker. This is T, and today is February 28, 2017, the last day of what has been dubbed as Black History Month. And today we're going to get into a number of topics. First being, well, primarily being around the psychology of racism, white supremacy, the psychology. So some of the questions we pose that are wrapped into that topic are, is there such a thing as quote-unquote black success in America? Does capitalism produce justice? When will whiteness end? And also, we'll explore the 10 stops suggested by Dr. Francis Kress Wilson, how quote-unquote blacks contribute to making whiteness stronger, how blacks can weaken whiteness, and can they destroy racism and white supremacy by merging with whites who claim to practice justice? And lastly, is the American empire in decline? So again, there's a number of topics there. And if any of my familiar with listening to the show, that's how we tend to set up our show. With that being said, get out the caller number. Call us at 1-866-510-9025 or 704-802-5056. And so again, racism, white supremacy, in the psychology. And this is a point that I've made reference to in some previous shows, but I think it drives home the aspect and inner workings of how racism, white supremacy actually operates. It's almost like a scale. And blackness is actually the scale by which whiteness is weighed. Blackness is the scale by which whiteness is weighed. We could look at, just as a more, I guess, practical aspect, something that would perhaps be more familiar to listeners or others, is if we take, for example, Christianity, and this is no knock on anyone or any particular religion. People should be able to practice and do what they want to do, as long as I would say they're not violating, well, two primary rules, which is causing harm to someone or damaging some of their property. Obviously, that's a whole other conversation as far as ownership. But anyway, I say that to say that the example I'm giving, blackness is the scale by which whiteness is weighed. The example with Christianity is to say, well, Let's look at blackness as the devil, quote-unquote, and whiteness as God. Can you have Christianity without a devil? Is that possible? Can you have whiteness without blackness? So I'll put that question out there. We'll get into it some more. I also have Brother DC on the line as well, one of my co-hosts. Greetings, brother.
Greetings, greetings, greetings. Welcome, everyone. Hope you, everyone is doing well and enjoying the last day of what has been known as Black History Month. So for everybody that is still celebrating that until the very last drop, welcome. And I wanted to kind of reiterate and jump on a little bit about what you was just basically stating there and about the psychology of how they have framework the words and the choice of words when it comes down to blackness. White is seen as pure, purified, clean, good, and it's not as much as said as what is represented by white. So when people think about white snow, so pretty, you know, let's go out and play, good times, you know, you're not having a negative feel when it comes down to whiteness. I mean, even as a little child, I mean, you know, we can go a whole lot of different ways, but I think that we have to be, if we're going to call ourselves, and for people that's listening to the program, and like T just alluded, a lot of what we like to do is kind of go deep into the analysis of the mental aspect of racism, white supremacy, because everybody that listens to this program do some sort of action throughout the day. And your action throughout the day, whether involuntary or voluntary, has a lot to do with the way that the world is framed now. And that's through the gaze of the European, and the European extrapolated as those who have classified themselves as white, the small minority of people, which I have used the words before seduced. I have used words that may not be able to convey the actual thoughts that I'm actually trying to kind of reiterate to the audience. But what I really want to kind of really hit on, and I think that people are starting to speak about it a little bit more now, is that this is all frameworked through our minds. Whether you know it or not, none of these systems exist without people's participation. But then if everybody knows that, why do we still go ahead and participate when we know that the system is pretty much flawed? See, now that's the key. What is motivating people to do the things that they do? And, you know, we have come to the conclusion on this program that there has been a system created, a system called white supremacy, that is first upheld through extreme violence, and then manipulated through financial means. And then after that, you are devastated psychologically because you don't have the means to dominate any of those other areas of activity. T, go ahead. Dig
deeper. Yes, sir. And you alluded to this, DC. One of the main strategies that's used is to employ and deploy language and variances thereof. So, you know, we talk about colonialism, and more often than not, we tie colonialism to war, land, and peoples, particularly those of European descent and those that are what you would call typically native, indigenous, what have you. But there's another type of colonialism that is not, as far as I know, in the mainstream halls, is not talked about, and that is colonialism of the mind. when you colonize someone's mind using language, it can automatically bring about a lot of what you intend to do to that person in terms of subjugating them or just simply having them submit to your will. And words play a big part in that. So we have to consider colonialism of the mind. And like I said, it's not talked about. We think about the land most of the time. And by colonizing someone's mind, whether they know it or not, these subconscious and these conscious actions that DC talked about, they manifest. And someone who's not cognizant of or does some type of self-check, say if they go into meditation, for example, and have these thoughts cross their mind and further examine them, you know, they'll just be walking around like pretty much like a robot, like an automaton. And of course, you typically get to know someone better based on their more subtle actions and what they say as well. You know, to the point where, you know, they say, well, I didn't know that I was doing X, Y, Z. And which something that they could be doing, for example, could be or said something that was racist, and then they become defensive. But a lot of what we do is not, we don't examine a person's nature, their essence. See, because in my view, racism is actually a causation, or rather, the results of something. That something that causes those results is that person's or that group of people's nature. We have to examine the person's nature, the group think, what is that nature? You know, we don't get angry at a dog or a cat for being a dog or a cat. If a cat is picky or finicky about what it eats, or if it's spraying around your house or catching snakes, we don't look at that as unusual and outside of the nature. But some reason, and I'm going to put myself in that because I don't want to speak from an ivory tower, so to speak, we look at so-called white people and we see their nature oftentimes. And obviously there are times when beings can be raised or taught contrary to their nature, and usually those are exceptions to the rule, like a cat that could swim, for example. But overall, we see the actions of these individuals, so-called white people, and not all of them, but a large majority of them. But for some reason, we ignore their nature, and we actually will fall into their manipulation, whether it be by using words or presenting us with some type of charismatic image that will appeal to us. And a lot of that has to do with the savior complex as well. And that might be good for another show. But go ahead, Brother DC, if you want to add on.
Yeah, I think Paradox is on the line. If you are somewhere where you can talk, Paradox, you know, you can unmute yourself. Well, maybe he's still, you know, taking care of some business. But yeah, absolutely. I guess we got so many little we got some topics here, and you know, please feel free to give us a call. So, you know, if you have any questions or if you want to kind of share your thoughts, please feel free to do so. We'll basically this is a no judgment zone. We don't have all the answers. We have not solved the problem of racism, and you know, there won't be any judgment on our end. So, let's see. So one of the first questions that we're asking or that we want to explore is, you know, we hear about you know, black success. You know, black people need to come together. Black people need to do things as a collective group. We need to, you know, build up our resources. We need to kind of, you know, create this cocoon within within the group of white supremacy. And that way, you know, once we could form this cocoon within the larger within the larger dome, we'll be able to be protected, because, you know, nobody's going to mess with us because of how powerful we built this thing from the inside. I'm not trying to be facetious here. Well, maybe a little bit, but please bear with me. So we wanted to ask a question to put it out there. Is there a such thing as Black success in America? And if so, what does that look like? So let me just first share my thoughts, and then, you know, whenever you guys want to jump in, you can. Success is one of those buzzwords, I think, that is relative to whoever is basically speaking or stating such word. Saying something is successful is pretty much in the eye of the beholder. What is that? What is success? Is that someone that makes a lot of money within the system of racism, white supremacy? Is that someone that basically, you know, do the actions, or they feel a less of a burden when they do their actions, when they do get their substance and then make their living? Is it someone that is free thinking? They don't have the burdens of feeling the pressure to do any particular thing. They feel as free as they can within the system's constraints. What does Black success look like? And I guess when people say it, I guess it looks different for different people. But when I hear that, and then when I look at the numbers that bear out that Black people are suffering the most, and that is globally, and then that is basically all over the planet, then I have to ask myself, when I say that, what do I really mean? Am I speaking from an actual platform and saying, well, as long as I can do this particular thing, then I'm successful? And then I just ask, well, then that's not really success. That's just basically somebody that's found a way to navigate within the system of racism. If we're under the actual system of racism, the system has been created to mistreat those that are not white and in a most severe manner, then, you know, that means that there cannot be a such thing as Black success. It's just a such thing as basically manipulating the system. That's what I call it. Maneuvering within the system. Getting a more comfortable spot within the system. What say you, T?
To me, the term Black success is, and this is again using words to manipulate, I believe. Obviously, there are people who are considered successful and who are classified, portions of the classification of Black, who are promulgated by the media, mainstream media. And so, to me, that word can be kind of tricky, because most of the individuals that are promoted by the media, mainstream media, quote unquote, have material gain, have more material gain, whether it be monetarily or through some sort of acquisition of material that they can show and display, and that is shown as being a success. But they might not necessarily have what would consider to be maybe perhaps more valuable to solving the problem of racism, white supremacy. And so, to me, it's kind of weird, because to me it's almost like Black Twitter. I mean, I get the inference behind using that term, Black Twitter, because it's obviously sort of a virtual universe that has been created by so-called Black people within the scope of a larger program that was not, at least to my knowledge, created by Black people. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of operates outside of the larger structure in terms of what it's talking about, what it's dealing with, whatever that may be. But I just wanted to say that it could lead people to believe, whether or not it be actually true or not, that hey, you know, so-called black people, they have their own portion of Twitter. You know, they run Twitter. Mm-hmm. I've heard that. I've heard people say, well,
it could be true
monetarily, but they say, well, you know, what if Twitter is nothing without black people being on it? But I'm sorry. Go ahead, brother.
Well, as far as I know, you know, Twitter can shut down an account at any moment. And I don't think that anybody that's in the purview of black Twitter has the power to stop someone being removed or canceling, getting their account canceled on Twitter. So that's number one. So there's still rules. There's still rules and guidelines that need to be followed. Like I said, I think that what we have done, and when I say we, those that are forced into the classification of black, and let me just go in detail about when I say forced into the classification of black. I know that people may hear that and say, "Well, what the hell are these dudes talking about?" There is a thing that people. People within our group, being that we're so fractured and we don't get along and we have a lot of different starting points, there is a reason for that. And a lot of it has to do with different points of views and different reactions to the system. When you have people that are so-called black that are light-skinned, and you have people that are very, very heavily melanated, there's a different experience, but then these people basically are in the same classification, whether they try to deny it or not. And, you know, people go back and forth with that. The truth of the matter is, you know, there's this classification that we find ourselves in is very broad, inclusive, no fault to our own, something that has basically been deemed upon us based off the treatment that we have experienced here in this particular country and abroad. And the reason why I use forced classification is because when you're talking about black people, there is not one particular group of black people that you could just say, well, we all have the agreeance on this, outside of just basically falling outside of the system and being people that are classified as black. That's our destination. That's where we begin as far as commonalities, as far as ideas, as far as like how to combat the system. That runs the gamut. You know, you got some people that believe different, you know, situations, different things. And that's the reason why I say that we're forced into a classification, because our classification is not based off anything that's dominant. The group that's classified themselves as white, they have forced some other groups that's within that classification that may not want to be white but don't have a choice, hence the Jews, hence the Russians, hence the people that's from basically Argentina, Spain, Italy. I mean, I could go down the list. I mean, they're all white people are not the same, but, you know, that's a whole nother deal. But like T alluded earlier, our blackness defines their whiteness. So without us, whiteness doesn't truly exist in a true sense of the word, which means that the system falls apart without having a floor, which is the bottom floor, which is inhabitants of people that they classify as not white, which is designated as labor force. So getting back to the topic, The success that I think that most black people are talking about is a mental barrier, I think, that when they speak on it, they're speaking from a very personal view of how they view the system. And they project out to say, well, I did this, then you could do it too. And no matter what your circumstances are, no matter where you come from, no matter what your income is, you could do it too. And that is not true in the true sense of the word. I mean, that it's almost like, well, no, I'm not going to do no metaphor, because it probably wouldn't do it any justice. I would just say this. You cannot walk anybody else's shoes, and especially within the system. Everybody has a different reaction. And the way the system has basically been set up and psychologically how it's been basically projected upon victims that are not white, it has done its job to subjugate and to keep, to neutralize the group that they classify as not white. And they do this mainly by confusion. We stay confused about what the system has done, what the history is, what the history means. We categorize things differently within our within context, and we don't have a good, clear view about the psychological damage that's been done to victims of racism, white supremacy, which we separate in these houses. So did you have like black women, black males, black children, black trans, black LGBT, you know, you have all these black power movement, people call it HOTEPs. You got people that go into, you know, black business people, business minded people. You got these different fractions of people that share this classification. And then when you make up the word, when you say the word success, you can imagine that that word success, like you said, it creates a different thought pattern in each person. Right. But see, the thing is that success is still defined by it's still defined by basically our bridge to whiteness, regardless of what or whatever you're coming from. The closer you get to being covered within this system, the more that that particular word makes sense. So whether you are so-called HOTEP, if you got more shiny things that you can say, I'm doing this, I'm traveling, I'm doing that, which you need, what? You need money to do so. So we, of course, we know, as far as economics is concerned, we know that black people are not dominant in economics. We're subordinate. So who are we getting those economics, those means from? How are we taking trips? Who do we get permission to fly overseas or to fly different areas and locations? What laws are we following? So we really have to break this thing down and kind of get down to the bare bones of what the system that we're living in. And then when you say black success, you have to understand that that encompasses a lot of different things, and it's based off the victim that you're speaking to.
And I think that's why I really love your concept of the idea of destination blackness and the fact that everyone has different starting points within quote unquote blackness. For example, and DC, we've alluded to this before, but individuals from the continent, as they say, who have immigrated to this so-called country, and they have a completely different worldview and experience once they arrive here. That may or may not change or update the longer they've been here, but to someone who was born and raised here, who has lineage here, they'll have a completely different worldview. So even within, you know, the question of does black success exist, you're going to have a variance of different opinions on the matter. And you even have people getting arguments over it. But the question
arguments.
I would pose, arguments, name-calling.
Ooh, fighting, boy. They're going to get throwing some blows in a minute here.
Check it out, though. This is the question I would pose. I say, well, if a person tells me I'm successful, I would ask them, what are you successful at? Because you have to succeed to obtain success. So what are you succeeding at? You know, what are you doing within the system to get quote unquote success? And everyone may consider themselves successful to a certain degree, but it's ironic that that word is actually synonymous with material gain. And as you alluded to, DC, who controls currency in this nation and worldwide, in fact? Petrodollar. Who controls that? Who will go to war to maintain that stuff?
There you go. There you go. Because then that speaks to even something even bigger. Okay, now you're successful. Can you hold it? I want that. What you going to do about it? You see, that's where we're vulnerable.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Are you jumping in from the corner of the free throw line? You going to jump in like you're Jordan? Go ahead, man. I'm going to throw a oop for you. There you go. Yeah. Go ahead, sir.
I'm in transit over, you know, over the air, but anyway, so I got a little bit of time. But it's an interesting conversation about success. I would say, you know, we do have success. You know, now success I think is undergirded by white supremacy, but within the system, you know, we could definitely argue that a lot, but many black people have been successful in different ways. You know, going back pretty far, you know, even if we're talking about revolutions in Haiti, uprisings in America and Brazil. Uprisings in South Africa and other places. If you want to just leave, you know, if you just want to look at it that way, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's maybe somewhat of a word you can kind of, it's maybe a word you can kind of play with. But I think one of the issues.
Let me just pattern this now. We said black success.
Right.
Which means that affiliates with the so-called group, not that somebody is black and successful. I mean, that's plenty. That's plenty of people. All but right. When you talk about black success, go ahead.
No, keep going.
No,
maybe
but
you can help me clarify.
No, no. What I'm thinking when people say black success, I don't think that that's just one person that they're speaking about. That they're speaking about a collective group that falls under that classification. And I was just basically specifying that when you say black, you have to really be aware that that encompasses so many different things and to a lot of different people. That a lot of different people have different ideas of what black is, how to define blackness. And then not only that, what the word success means. You see what
That's
I'm saying?
True.
And it depends on whether this person has been able to affiliate themselves close to any form of whiteness. Like literally, I don't care who you talk to. And Mr. Fuller, Master Teacher, Mr. Fuller, has always reiterated this. When you get to asking, no matter what it is, if it's anything of so-called value, because like you alluded to, like T alluded to, they dominate the realm of economics and military. When it gets down to asking, then you're asking somebody that's white.
Right. So the question is, are we looking at the word success as a dominant word? So would you say black, if I had to say black as a whole, if I had to grade a black person, and I think about, sometimes I think about Dr. Leather when she says, you know, black get back. If I try to say, well, us as a collective group on the planet, you know, are we successful as a group? I think that would definitely be debatable. It might even be a bit painful. You know, to come to some of the conclusions when you look at us as a collective group.
Right.
But I would say that there have been many instances where we have had some success. Now, success can be a negative or a positive, right? You can kind of use that word in different forms. And so would it be successful if we've gotten closer to whiteness? We just don't call it whiteness?
Well, that's my argument, that black success
are there black people who have sexed themselves in with a white person to become white, to pass as white?
Well, not just that. Not just that.
Are those people successful because they became white?
We got those. But then not only that, moving into what we call it, the suburbs, leaving the so-called, you know, and I'm putting my quotations all over my head now. The hood, No matter where you at, in this country, globally, wherever that is, you know what that means. So when you move out to the suburbs, you move out to these areas, who are we trying to get close to? Now, this is not said now. This is not said. We don't say the words, "I just moved out here because this is where all the white." Well, no, let me take that back. I have heard people say that. I have heard people say that. That's where the white people, that, you know, them white, if them white people out there, then you know the schools ain't gonna be that bad, right?
And the question is, does, you know, if you start to look at us as a group, I think you had mentioned earlier that I think since we do have some fractures, it appears to be fractures, or just different ideologies or different thought patterns, that can we get on some sort of path to success, as they say in business? And what does that look like? Is that producing justice, ending white supremacy, you know, fighting white supremacy, and trying to figure out, you know, what are the best approaches to dealing with our group as well? To see can we develop some forms of success? I know Dr. Weldon, you know, she does have some recommendations, and other people do as well, obviously. So I think we do have some of that going on as well. So,
well, you know, I would define success very differently. I would define success as being a victim of racism that is getting less confused within mm-hmm. the system of racism. That is success to me, because what it allows someone to do when they get less confused about the system, it allows that person to free themselves of the burden of where they actually are at this particular moment. Because we are at a moment where there's a lot of name calling. There's a lot of, you know, fighting within the group that is forced into the classification of black. You have what I would call a misdirection. You know, we can't even study the system properly or talk about it properly and then diagnose from there, because we're too busy fact finding and you know, holding people accountable that don't control anything because of their reaction to the system of racism, white supremacy. So we're so busy pointing at victims of racism that we miss the overall scope of what's basically happening, because we're in this type of system. And that success is defined by whatever your purview is to whiteness. I don't care what it is. And all of us fall victim to it. It's just like, that's why, you know, I have such a problem with name calling. Like that is one of the first things. Like to me, you know, name calling just shows me that we're confused about racism. You know, if you're going to call somebody else a coon, I guarantee you that the person that's doing the name calling or calling whoever that's a coon, if you have a job, if you go to work, if you clock in, if you do this, if you're working for somebody and you demand money from somebody that's working for somebody, you're basically can be called a coon too. We're all participating in the system, whether it's directly or indirectly. We do
When you say indirectly, can you just kind of clarify? You're saying that if I work within the system as far as a job or whatever, and I happen to give my money to someone who doesn't, that doesn't negate anything, is what you're saying, right?
Because your substance,
you're not clean, person. You
yeah.
don't have a, you know,
your
old
substance,
folks that,
the dollar that I give you, I got from the post office. I got from the
say,
police
what
department.
What are you saying? I think it was I don't know if it was a Mensa Society. I forget what it was. Somebody tried to, the young boy tried to give the grandparents or the mama some money. Uh-huh. Like, I don't want that drug money, even though it all spends the same, right? I don't want that drug.
This country is the reason why you have that money circulating around here. T, you was trying to say something?
No, that was what Paradox gave as a metaphor. That was great. You know, no one's hands are clean. Even some of the most simplest jobs, let's say someone who's a porter, you know, a janitor, who cleans government buildings for a living. They are still tied in with, you know, they may clean the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
They're still tied in with it.
Absolutely.
Whether you want to believe it or not, they play a part. You know,
and,
people come
and,
in and go ahead.
No, and being mistreated all at the same time. It doesn't change your classification. It doesn't change that you're going to be a victim of racism. You know, this is what the system is, and this is what we're talking about, that is psychological. We haven't been able to see things clearly. And that's all of us. That's us included. Like, we're not outside of that. Like, this is very confusing. When you break it down, it's hard to even try to find the right words for it, because every time we try to compare it to something, it's a false equivalency. It never matches up. So when you hear people, especially victims, to start to say, well, yeah, you know, we ought to do what the Chinese do. Well, Chinese didn't experience this. They're forced into the classification also. But it's a different paradigm. It's a different energy. And they don't run anything. They don't run nothing. I made a statement. Either it's true or it's not true. Chinese people don't dominate my life. I'm not speaking Chinese. I'm not. We stay in the D.C. area. We stay here. We have a Chinatown. How big is Chinatown, fellas? Just give me a breakdown. How big is it?
Maybe one block, if that.
Come on, man. Like literally.
That's
like
a town.
Like, come on now.
Yeah, I mean, you can't.
We got to be honest here. Like straight up.
Well, you also need to distinguish. I think something that, back to what you were saying about confusion, because it takes time to study all this. There's so much information you got to learn.
It's
kind of overwhelming. But one thing we always have to remember is American and Western propaganda. I think they use words like fear-mongering and stable rattling and all these other things, and war hawks. And so you have all this language out there, and you have, it's really all warfare. That a lot of information that you're going to get is going to be skewed, because, you know, you got people in this country who need you to be afraid. And I'm specifically talking about white people, talking to white people, by the way. But, you know, they need to gin up some type of fear or whatever to the enemies. And China, even though they're frenemies, as they say, to the West, I guess, or whatever, they're being exploited by the West, in my opinion. I think that when you get information, you have to be kind of careful with it because of that, right? Because, you know, you're trying to convince people that people are your enemy, but a lot of information comes out to make things seem like, oh, man, this you know, India's going to take over the world. Mm-hmm. And they sell that sort of that global, worldwide, coming to an end, condemnation type of behavior, like they're doing with Islam.
Right.
You know, they have you thinking that Islam is going to end the world. I mean, it's so far from ridiculous. You know, now it may end whiteness. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they may do that, but as far as it ending the world let me say not end whiteness, but I think that it threatens whiteness probably more than most things in my estimation. But anyway, I'll stop right there.
Wouldn't ending whiteness be ending the world, as far as we know?
I've heard an analyst, older white gentleman, make a response that says if Russia and America go to war, the world will come to an end completely. We'll be living in post-apocalyptic times. Is how he put it, with the amount of weaponry that these two nations obtained. Basically, that if people understood the former USSR, and if people understood America, specifically those two land masses, they would understand, we talk about levels of power, the ability to commit mass genocide. You only need to talk about those two places. Everybody else is secondary. Everybody else is is I'm using another metaphor. What's the dude who got drafted before Michael Jordan?
Yeah, Len Bias.
No, not Len Bias.
Man,
I want to say Brad. Was it Brad Doherty? No, Sam Bowie.
It's kind of like places, people like China, India, Ecuador, Venezuela, Vietnam, other places like that. That's what they are. Mm-hmm. People got their chest poked out, but I don't think people really can grasp those concepts. Now, at the same time, as I said, the paradox or the contradiction is that's what they tell them. That's what they, that's what the appearance or what they show them seems to be. So based off of how they position things, there's only two places you should be fearing here. Everybody else is allowed to play. Everybody else is allowed to play. They let these small nations fight each other while they exploit resources, et cetera. But anyway, I don't want to get on Russia and America right now, but I just want to throw that in there. You mentioned, based on what you just said earlier, D.C., since it's been in the news lately, now all of a sudden everybody wants to talk about Russia. So let me not be one of those people.
We've been on that anyway, because they was one of the last vestiges of white European nations that wanted to, well, not even European nations, but people that was forced. They were the people, one of the last people that's forced into the classification. They're like, no. Yeah. We're not white people. We're Russian. You understand? They'd be like, you know, we don't care about that. Like, we want to
conquer our own shit. We want to do our own thing.
Yeah. Literally, like, we got our
Kremlin.
We want
to pillage our own place the way we want to pillage.
We got the Kremlin. We got people over here that do all kinds of espionage. We got our own scientists. We got our own way of doing things. So don't come over here trying to talk about you're going to make this all some kind of democracy. We ain't going for that. Absolutely not. You understand?
Forget about the United Nations. Y'all not about, you know what's so crazy about it, what people don't understand is that how those nations have control over these people's economies and stuff, even Russia for that matter, where they can be punished. It's really interesting. Even Russia, with the power that it used to have and the power that it's probably trying to reassert, in various ways, it's just fascinating to watch that process. Mm-hmm. To be a large power, you know, get your ass whooped, and then you try to reignite that. And I like the contrast that up against black power. You know, when you contrast that type of stuff against blackness, Afrocentrism, when you start to tie it into Pan-Africanism, and you tie it into other things, black economics, black empowerment, black investment. When you connect those dots, and we're directly under white supremacy, specifically in America, we have to be honest about what's going on here. And if you're honest about it, I think that things are getting a little bit better. You know, the ego has to be checked. But anyway.
Go ahead.
I think that whenever you're dealing with the ideology and you're trying to, I think it's important to maintain clarity and keep a focus on things outside of that ideology, because you can't, there's certain safety mechanisms that are built into the ideology of racism and white supremacy. And one of them is victims arguing amongst each other. And what it does is it never keeps the focus on the actual system and the people who are participating in it. Non-black people who are participating in it and seeing how they actually function, because that's the point of this show, I think, is when we talk about the psychology of racism, white supremacy, how does it actually work from a nature standpoint, from a person's nature, how does their brain function? Because one thing is clear is that, you know, just looking at, and I'll let you get in, just looking at so-called black people from a historical perspective, our brain does not fire, our neurons don't fire and function like the white mindset.
Are you talking about the black part of us or the white part of us?
Well, we know that there's a nature within so-called black people that does not fall in line with a lot of things. Because can you name one time, as far as we know in history, going back with a so-called white man for a large degree has gotten along with any other peoples or any other creatures on the planet?
No, they always try to dominate.
Okay, because I do know that there were a lot of so-called indigenous cultures that were made up of so-called black people who coexisted with nature. And so that's my point. Even the fact that we are, when you said the white or the black part of us, even the fact that we have a bicameral mind that has been created by the racist whites, we still function to a degree that is not the same as they function. We don't think like they do.
And T, I'm so glad that you brought that up. I know that you gentlemen, and this is for the audience also, I know that you guys have not seen the movie Get Out. Reading is more important than television or movies. Reading is way more important.
Before you said that Get Out, let me just say this real quick on the white power thing, and then, yes, we can, that's a good segue. But from a white power, and I know you said racism, white supremacy. I do like the word white power, and I'm gonna tell you, if when you start talking about people who really have power, you know, if they don't have a navy, is it simple things like that? If you don't have a navy, you're not even in the discussion. Now, if you go and Google how many nations have actual navies, submarines, battleships, those are the players. Everybody else is in the dungeons in my mind. Those are the players. Those are the people who decide what happens on this planet. Just so people are very clear, we have to be very cognizant of that and make sure. And again, I'm gonna keep repeating it. You got to make sure your ego is in check. If you've never seen a battleship or a submarine, you need to get your ego in check. Because it's serious, right? We're talking about warfare. But anyway, my bad. You're talking about Get Out.
Yeah, so Get Out is it examines the mentality of black folks dealing with the white psyche and the attack that has basically been forced upon those that have been, that's in the classification of black. And I think to W.E.B. Du Bois, when he described double consciousness, see, because in your body can't manifest whiteness because you're not white, but then you're told to behave as a white person. So how do you coincide that when we're naturally totally not like that? Back to what T was reiterating, like that's not something that's natural for us to take, you know, fight, you know, rip something away from people. Even though we have people within our group that do it, they tend to be neutralized by the, you know, the elders within the community. So let me read this really, really quick. And I wanted to I don't really want to get into the movie Get Out. I just want to kind of like, you know, pattern this and we can move on to the next thing. But we definitely have to do a program just subject to that. So whenever you guys see it, let me know. We can queue up the program. That is something that we have to discuss. But W.E. Du Bois described double consciousness as this. It is a peculiar situation, sensation, this double consciousness. This sense of always looking at oneself through the eyes of others, of measuring one soul by the tape of a world that looks on in amused contempt and pity. One ever feels his two-ness, an American, a Negro, two souls, two thoughts, two unreconciled strivings, two warring ideals in one dark body or light-skinned body. We know there are light-skinned black people whose dogged strength alone keeps it from being torn asunder. The history of the American Negro is the history of this strife, this longing to attain self-conscious manhood or womanhood, to merge his double self into a better and truer self. In this merging, he wishes, he or she wishes, neither of the older selves to be lost. He or she doesn't wish to Africanize America, for America has too much to teach the world and Africa. He wouldn't bleach his Negro blood in a flood of white Americanism, for he knows that Negro blood has a message for the world. He simply wishes to make it possible for a man to be both a Negro and an American without being cursed and spit upon by his fellows, white people, without having the doors of opportunity closed roughly in his face. Now think about that. The conflict that's already natural, basically describing the conflicting ideals. Even when something as simple as when we have to describe to our young people, you happen to be a black person. Well, why am I black? Why do you call me black when, you know, and why is Johnny or Tim over there, why is he white? You see what I'm saying? Like that whole ideal of what it means to be a black person, the reason why it's a forced classification, the reason why somebody has to teach you or tell you about the history behind that to all let you know all about what racism, white supremacy, and what the psychological damage that's been done to us, what that's all about.
You know, it's interesting, too, because we always, well, I would say it's often black people, so-called, are equated with crabs in a barrel. And we know that image is for anyone who's, you know, crabs are big in Maryland, right, fellas?
Yes, sir.
So, you know, anyone who's actually bought crabs live and cooked them, which probably most of us have in the living area, when they actually see the light and they're trying to come out of whatever container you have them in, you grab one with a pair of tongs, the other one's going to grab, another one's going to grab onto the other one, possibly even crush his shell or rip one of his legs or claws off, just trying to get out. But what happens when, you know, we talk about what happens when the crabs are not in the barrel, just out in nature. See, because we've been removed from our natural habitat. We've been created. We've been manufactured. What does that look like? We don't know what that looks like. We can't even imagine what that looks like. But we try to come with and manifest inklings of what that is, you know, whether we're posing with stacks of money on Instagram or, and I'm not saying this to bash victims. I'm just illustrating the point is that, you know, we're posing with money on Instagram. We're posting pictures of places that we travel because we're trying to experience what, essentially what it means to be white, to have that freedom that we've never had. Absolutely. We haven't experienced that. And so when you get a taste of it, you're subject to do things that are not only contrary to your nature, but are detrimental to your well-being.
Okay, Doc, you got anything?
Yeah, I was going to say, one thing, you didn't say what reading is more important than watching TV?
Yes, sir. Agreed.
I do agree with that. So we do want to do a shout-out to the Cows, Gus T. Renegades.
Great program.
They are reading the, what are they reading right now?
The Delectable
Negro.
The Delectable Negro. Very, very important book. Absolutely.
I think they're on, part five.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just started on the thing. I'm just starting. I'm on part one still. So it's
So Paradox, right before you get started, you know, we just keep your thought. We're going to come back. We're going to go to break. And then once we come back, we're going to jump right back into discussion of the psychological attack within the system of racism, white supremacy, and how it basically affects its victims, especially those that are classified as black. We'll be right back. This is the Code Breakers.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Welcome back. Welcome back. This is the Code Breakers. So, Paradox, you got it. You got it queued up. You good to go?
Yeah. I just wanted to just throw that in there about Gus T and the Cows. They are on Black Talk Radio Network. Also, Dr. Welsing and the ISIS papers. Another good read, as well as Mr. Fuller's books that he's came up with as well. So. I just wanted to say that you had mentioned reading is more important. So those are some good reads, right?
Yeah, the Compensatory Code book for victims of racism, white supremacy, and plus he has a word guide basically describing different words and giving you a different way to kind of view the words that we use on a regular basis. Very, 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 very helpful. And would, you know, help to alleviate a little bit of confusion when it comes down to the system of racism. So I'd like to jump into the next part. We kind of been discussing it already, but let me just see here. I have it. No, it was taking me to pull it up. So we had a question, and it's kind of like, I guess we already kind of went over it, but do capital or getting a significant amount of capital, resources, getting dollars, does that produce justice? And I would like to add on that, does it produce justice, and does it protect you from being the victim of racism, white supremacy?
Yeah.
Do you guys have anything on that? Do you think that, you know, collecting dollars, if there was a little bit more of, you know, the super employer, the super Uber entrepreneur, like, you know, Oprah Winfrey, the Michael Jordans of the world, the gentleman that's out of Denver, they collect a lot of dollars. If they have company, would that create a stronger cocoon where blackness or people that are classified as black are more protected within the system of racism, white supremacy?
So you mean like if we printed our own money and then asked white folks to carry the money under their currency, like the rest of the planet does? So they can, they'll back us, they'll be our gold, you know, the power of whiteness, you know, back to print our own money out.
Military to back up your currency, too. Don't forget that.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Well, we're not talking about currency.
You're going to take this dollar. You're going to take this money.
We're talking about spending a dollar. We're talking about spending a dollar in the black community and let it bounce about 18,000 times. And then once it bounces 18,000 times, that's going to create this economic.
No. We're going to call China.
That's not right.
No, we're going to ask China. We're going to ask China to back our currency.
What's interesting about capitalism, right, is the so-called father of capitalism, Adam Smith, wrote a book called The Wealth of Nations. And part of the opening paragraph in the book, I just want to kind of illustrate for the listenership. He writes, "Such nations, however, are so miserably poor that from mere want they are frequently reduced to the necessity sometimes of directly destroying and sometimes of abandoning their infants, their old people, and those afflicted with lingering diseases, to perish with hunger or to be devoured by wild beasts. Among civilized and thriving nations, on the contrary, the produce of the whole labor of the society is so great that all are often abundantly supplied, and a workforce, even of the lowest and poorest order, if he is frugal and industrious, may enjoy a greater share of the necessaries and conveniences of life than it is possible for any savage to acquire."
Savage.
That's in his book, people. The Father of Capitalism.
I wonder who he was talking about when he said that.
I think that I think that you know, theoretically, if white power did not exist, then I think it would probably be a less complicated question. If you were a group of people who were struggling, maybe under a different system, the problem that we have, and what we call the black community within the white community, is we're never left alone. You know, they're not being as I know Gus hate the word fair. They're not being fair. They're not letting us, you know. So, you know, it's interesting. I'll let you guys jump in. I just want to say it's interesting that, and this is for the listeners, to weed out black people who are con artists, meaning that people who are going to take whatever you got, whatever couple of crumbs, look at the fat back that you got, they're going to tell you that what we're talking about is not true. And they're not going to say it directly. It will be indirectly. It will be passive aggressively. But the thing is that white people have made, once they gave us, let me not say gave, once we fought for our freedom, a couple hundred years back, 150 years back, we was in a position to do some things, and I won't go into my own theories about what should have happened, but we took a position, you know, we fought for citizenship, we took a position, and we were told, I believe, that we were going to get some help and get some protection, and we were going to be able to develop our own community within the larger community. This was something that the power group decided they had to do. I believe to a degree that we forced their hand, I wouldn't say a larger degree, but to, you know, in a different vein, they had some decisions to make as far as them building a nation. And so it's a lot of, some people say it's very simple. I think there's a lot of complexities, a lot of things at play in Europe and also in this nation that put things or made the perfect storm for those events to take place back in the mid-1800s. But anyway, we had a position, and I wouldn't even say white folks made an effort as we started to develop and integrate and build within this economy back in that time frame. But we developed some things, put some things together, and they made a decision. Not all of them, not some of them. Them as a collective organization. And I think we may get confused between sometimes we'll try to pull back a little bit and say, well, not all of them is this, or some of them are. That's really kind of irrelevant. Them as a collective organization, as a family. They decided to stitch together.
Absolutely.
I would say from 50 nations comes whiteness. And they can culturally do whatever they want to do, but the overarching connection or the connective tissue is whiteness. And y'all can jump in whenever, but I'm just saying that because of the threat, and this connects to the ISIS purpose in a lot of ways, but the connective tissue is we cannot allow people that is not white, especially here, in America at the time, especially here, to become rooted within the economy, to become rooted within the politics, to become rooted within the military. And I mean going because specifically black people have a very unique ability. We have an extremely high IQ. And so naturally, when you think about West Point, we would have ran West Point. And I'm just going hypothetical, obviously, but we would have ran West Point. We would have ran this. We would have ran that. We would have had a block of power before the turn of the century. Period, point blank. There's no confusion by that. And the one reason why we would have been so effective is because coming, being here for so long and picking up taking our current skill sets and merging them with how the European functions. And so we've adapted to their thought patterns. And so being able to merge those two things together makes us very dangerous. Mm-hmm. And if you look at us from the mid 1800s up until 1900, we was like, in a funny way, we was kind of like industrialization, right? So we was moving so fast, so rapidly, because we have such a large skill set. So from a genetic perspective, from a power perspective, they basically declared war. So before, we were their labor force, so there was no war on us. In my mind, in that sense, it was just that we have human capital. We're going to do what we got to do to manage and maintain this capital through chattel slavery, through that system. Coming out of that, many decisions as they saw our power manifest rapidly. And so you got to think about it, people on listening to this call, is that we're talking about people sitting around at the highest levels trying to develop a power and not obviously trying to share it with us, because clearly we're participating. We're part of the military. We're part of everything. So it's not like we're going to take something. We were going to just be more integral into the overall American process. And so even us willing to participate didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's about whiteness, not economics, not military, not politics. We need to maintain whiteness. Because this is a perfect place where either whiteness would have survived, right, or whiteness would have grown, which it did, or would have become extinct because of blackness, because of how we would have impacted the environment.
But they could not Brazil. Operate the way.
What is the thing? They could not operate on the planet the way they wanted to, mm-hmm. if we were integral at the highest levels in this nation. It wouldn't. This country wouldn't have been as appealing to other Europeans coming into the 1910s and the 1920s if they knew that when they got here that they were going to have to report to black folks.
I want to stay there.
Okay,
I really want to stay there just for historical context to what you're saying, just to kind of give people a look of it. During the advent of slavery, when slavery ended in 1865, there was a boom of African Americans, black folks, colored folks, Negroes, people that have been classified as black, that once they left the plantation, the families were scattered. Some of them got their families, some of them didn't. But they started to create towns right on the spot in the middle of nowhere and have thriving so-called communities within this system. Operate the exact same way, do the exact same thing, get land grants, all this type of thing, started to move around and do the things that basically the European was doing. And it became very clear, especially to whiteness, the threat of whiteness in the so-called South, that they were being outpaced by black folk, that black folks technically did not need whiteness to do what they needed to do. There's been so many things that's been proven this point. People call it Rosewood and things of that nature, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Black Wall Street. We have all kinds of examples, but those are not the only two locations. We have places all over in the United States where that was an example. But then comes the terrorist part. Jim Crow gets initiated. Reconstruction ends. They wipe out all black establishment, wipe all that out within the government. The so-called South rises again. The violence is allowed on a wide level. What does that do to the people that are classified as black when they so-called saw black success? I'm doing it your way. I'm doing what you said that I should be able to do. And not bothering anybody. We have our own communities. We're trying to do what we do over here and mind our own business, build up our communities, pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. Shout out to Booker T. Washington. Do the things that basically have created so we can create our own little thing here. being that the Negro, the colored person, the black person was self-taught, that they did not need these institutions to validate them, that they can do things on their own and develop their own communities, the psychological attack had to happen. Children have to see their parents get terrorized, their fathers get hung, their mothers get raped. You see what I'm saying? People becoming vulnerable. People thinking that they had to escape their communities to go north, to go west, to escape, become refugees in your own so-called country. So now we've been chasing whiteness in this so-called liberal white ever since. We have become we basically have described someone or a group that has basically been dominated physically, and then basically our mental has become fractured within this system. We have made so many compromises that now we have been driven insane, some of us, that we have these illusions of grandeur. I just want to make a point. Let me not mince words. I don't believe in capitalism. I have a very, very strict view when it comes down to this. I think capitalism is a system based on inequality. I always felt this way, even before the book written by Thomas Piketty. The fellas on the line can shout this out. I have always felt this way about economics. That is a false way of looking at things on how to basically correct your problem. Because at the end of the day, if you cannot defend it, then it can be taken away, and then you're vulnerable. And then when you try to build it up again, you don't want to because it's already been taken from you. That breaks the spirit of someone. But Thomas Piketty says something very, very, I think, deep. And he has a book called Capitalism in the 21st Century. People are basically speaking about this book, hot off the presses. A lot of people are basically kind of referencing the book for, you know, reason why capitalism is basically failing. But he said inequality is not an accident, but rather a feature of capitalism. It can only be reversed by government sanctions, which means that he believes that without government intervention, there's no way to correct this problem. Good luck with that. And also, he has a word called patrimonial capitalism, in which much of the economy is dominated by inherited wealth. The power of this economic class is increasing, threatening to create an oligarchy. That sounds familiar? Sounds like Europe, right? Sounds like we're going right back to what it was over there when it was basically the French Empire, the UK Empire, and things of that nature, where basically there's no way to move from your actual position. Sort of sound like blackness to me.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Greetings, everyone. Very, very intriguing conversation that y'all been having tonight. Very important questions that we should be asking ourselves and trying to come up with answers on the issue of capitalism. Ken, my question is, and I do have a follow-up, but my question is, do you remember the first time you heard the word capitalism or variation of capitalism, like capital, in the context of money, of wealth? When was the first time you heard that term or read it?
Well, for me, it was college that I even had a concept of what that even meant.
Let me restate that. What's the earliest, even when you read about capitalism, when would you date the text? Meaning, was the conversation or the information talking about something happened in the 70s, the 80s, the 1960s, 50s? When did capitalism become such a used term?
Ooh, I don't know that for sure.
The first time, the first time I read about capitalism and the term used was capital was Thomas Jefferson. I read a letter that he wrote to a bunch of other slavers bragging about this formula he came up with to increase his capital. He said, he said every time a black child is born on his plantation, his capital increases by a certain percentage.
Right.
Slavery, capitalism, and to me, and some may disagree, but I believe the root cause of white supremacy is slavery. When you look at white people, the, well, my cousin said this. I didn't verify it, but I said, we had a conversation, and I said to him, he had put a question out there, and I was like, well, the white people, white race was invented, if we're talking about America, in the late 1600s. When they pushed the Virginia slave codes and the American colonies, and that's when they start taking the rights or so-called rights away from free black people, because free black people have always existed, and took away their rights in these this legislation called slave codes. But when I read Thomas Jefferson's letter and you think about capitalism today, some people call it a parasitic system. I mean, it just basically steals the energy and the wealth of all its victims. That's slavery. And so when Thomas Jefferson, I read that letter where he mentioned capital being tied, his capital increase and tied to every slave born. Let me restate that. Every human being born into slavery on his plantation, his wealth increased by a certain percentage point. He had down to a science. Thank you for allowing me to share.
No problem. And, no problem. That's also whether he bred him or not, too. Yeah, basically.
That's interesting. You mentioned that, Mr. Scully. Thanks for that input. Because, yeah, no doubt. One thing that I like to do quite a bit is to go back and look at the root words, the meaning of words. And so if you look at capital, it comes from Latin meaning. In Latin, it's to put, and it means head. So what he was literally talking about, Thomas Jefferson, was head count. My capital was according to my head count. And thus you get into the stock market.
Which is physical.
Exactly. And that's how you get into Wall Street, which was the slave trading market.
Yes.
And that's how you get into stocks and bonds. It's literally my head count. Human capital, my head count tells me how much I can potentially make in a particular market. So it's interesting you bring that up. Something else, if I could just, I wanted to mention too, if, because I know we've kind of been on, we're coming down to what, we got about half an hour left or so.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wanted to know if you fellas were cool with moving on to maybe some of the other topics, like, I don't know, the decline of the American Empire, because I have some thoughts on.
Let me, just before I'm gonna let you go, take me one second. Let me just say this one piece about what we were just talking about. I just want to get out, and it'll be real, real quick, if you don't mind.
No,
I just wanted to say that as DC was even spreading out the history, I know we kind of ended it a little short. I just wanted for people to think about, and it's something I think about too, is that. While President Barack Obama was in office for 8 years, I just thought about it's kind of weird not to even think it's kind of fun, it's kind of strange, thinking about capital, thinking about President Obama, and did he have the ability, just that one person in that one job, in that one office, have the ability to increase the value of a black male? You know, did Michelle and her two girls increase the value of the black female body, the black male body? Then I think about Trayvon. Like, I cannot get his face out of my head, or even Michael Brown. It's disturbing to say the least. But anyway, I just wanted to say that.
Go ahead, T.
No, that I was going to say that sounds like another show that we should get into at some point.
Absolutely.
That's definitely diving deep. But just to share some of the thoughts that I was having, how the fact that, you know, we talk about ways that the American Empire is on the decline. Can you actually have, or maybe the end of so-called whiteness, can you have, because I know there are a lot of different groups
here, particularly, that self-identify, whether it be through sex, religion, obviously race, and ethnicities. And I'm not saying this to disparage any particular group of people, but can I like to throw different words out, because like Willie Fuller says, Willie Fuller Jr., he mentions how white supremacists, they won't create words for you. You'll become up with words for yourself and essentially use those as propaganda tools or ways to, if we influence the system and modes of thinking to change people's ideological perspectives. So, for instance, could there at some point be a trans black group or a trans white group? Because, I mean, we've seen, for instance, Rachel Dolezal, she could essentially be considered trans black. And so that's interesting to me.
Go deeper. When you say trans black, what exactly?
So if we use the example of Rachel Dolezal, most people probably already know, but she was in charge of the NAACP, correct? I believe director.
And Spokane, Washington. Yep.
Yes. And so if you look at her from a, what is it called? A phenotypical view, she does kind of resemble a light-skinned African-American woman. You know, she wears, in my view, and that's where confusion comes in.
I'm not going to talk about my black females on this program. That woman is clowning us.
That's my destination blackness. If you put a picture of her with braids, I don't know if you've seen her with her hair braided. If you put that next to her wedding photo, because she was married to a black man, so-called black man.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at her wedding photo, she looks nothing like she looks with her hair braided, and I guess that's more of a current, up-to-date photo. But recently, she's gone through struggles where no one will hire her, and she says she's living off of food stamps, but she's basically saying she will never go back to claiming white again. And she says that she grew up, her parents, they adopted, I think, two or three black children. And so she says that she grew up braiding their hair and talking to them about black history. I don't know if that's true or not. I'm just saying what she was relaying to whoever was interviewing her. And so I think it's interesting that, you know, she has been labeled a race traitor by some so-called white people. And she's denying whiteness to a degree, and yet still saying that she wants to be viewed as black, when it was her parents who outed her in the first place and said, no, you're not black. What are you talking about? You're a white woman. I have the pictures to prove it. I'm going to go to the media with it. So I just want to say this right quick. So is that going to be used as a tool to create a group called trans black or trans white in order to further subjugate or further remove rights from people who are already subjugated?
Oof.
I know that it's more philosophical around trans white or trans black, but since you just mentioned her, the one thing about this person, and I don't know if she is maybe she is the exact example of what you're talking about actually. What she shows is white power. That's the power of whiteness. If you look at Europeans and when they travel around the world, a percentage of them tend to adopt to the extreme indigenous culture. Now, I'm not a psychologist, but Dr. Wellesley is, so I'll just leave it there. So she's the expert. I'm not the expert. I don't know anything. I'm just some random person. I will say this, though. It shows white power in every way possible. It is as white as you can get. What she's doing, that's what it means to be white. And that's all I need to say. If you understand white people and whiteness, she is the poster child for what it means to be white. Now I'm not even gonna explain any more than that. I'm gonna stop right there.
Well, I think we have a break coming up, so we will see you on the back end. Thanks for listening to the Code Breakers.
Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
Tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium.
Welcome back to the Code Breakers. Before the break, we were talking about Rachel Dolezal and throwing around the idea that maybe they will come out with a trans black or a trans white group.
What was the definition for that, by the way?
For trans black, trans white?
Yeah.
I don't have that yet, but I will come up with a codified definition.
Compensatory.
Yeah, indeed.
Do you think that some of that has already? Do we think that even though that may be a new word, the action, going on. Just historically speaking, I just think that there's a lot of truth in what you're talking about. I'm just kind of messing around with you with the Dolezal thing, but there's definitely, I think, some truth historically up until now around identifications, and will that be added into some of the classifications as well? Or why won't it be? Why won't that be challenged? Because one thing I've been challenging white people that I've come in contact with is, will you stop being white? But let's not talk about nothing else. I want a movement for you guys to stop being white. But anyway, I'll let you go ahead. My bad.
No, that's fine.
That's what some people would argue that Rachel Dolezal is trying to do. Isn't that sort of like what you was reiterating, T? About her rejecting her whiteness?
Yeah, I mean, she is pretty much adamantly and staunchly saying that she is not white. So not sure what that means. I mean, I agree with you, Paradox, though.
That is white supremacy.
I agree 100%, but I feel that there's something else afoot. I mean, we know the obvious, but there's always something else going on behind the scenes. And so I just wonder, are they going to create? Because you alluded to the fact that indeed has been going on historically, but see, you have to create an actual group. You have to give it a name. And that way, you can assign and ascribe certain attributes to it.
Have you heard of white Indians?
That group does not exist. That label, I should say. That label doesn't exist.
Is there a thing in this country where there are groups of people who are claiming to be native to this land who are actually pale-skinned white people?
Indeed.
Who are on the native scrolls and who receive benefits and claim to be a native tribe.
Indeed.
Or part of a native tribe.
That's exactly what I'm alluding to, is the fact that by creating this group, a trans black or a trans white group, then you allow them certain privileges that so-called black people normally get. And you take those from people who are forced into that classification just because that person is white. They can actually practice and use that power to
basically squeeze themselves into that niche. So, yeah, that's exactly what I'm getting at.
Well, I would just say this because, you know, trying to describe the true meaning to what racial dolezal is trying to prove and then actually trying to describe what she's doing. I do think that it needs to be reiterated that we do not do the classifying. People that are classified as black. However, as an observation to what she's doing, is it causing a weakness within the system, or is it causing more confusion? And I think that racial dolezal is causing extreme confusion, whether it's voluntary or involuntary. But
Rachel Dolezal is practicing racism.
Yeah, so that's where I would kind of like leave it, because it's kind of hard, because like I said, we're dealing with definitions that are forced upon us, and that part of basically somebody calling themselves trans black, it just seems very, very, very confusing to me when we use language like that. I mean, just thinking about what that means in the larger span of things, where somebody has to, if you're talking about somebody that's trans sexual, then that's somebody that was born into one sex, but always felt like, you know, mind, body, and spirit, that they should have been another sex, and they have physical surgery to change that. So, I mean, yeah, that,
do you,
that is,
do you think
that
that's a possibility, though? Do you think that's a possibility at some point, though?
Do I think that would help solve the system of racism and white supremacy?
No, do you think it's a possibility that there will be creation of these trans racial groups?
If it supports the system of racism, yes. But I don't know what Rachel Dolezal's deal. I would tend to agree with what Paradox says, that she is basically someone that is trying to benefit herself within the system of racism, white supremacy. So create a uniqueness within herself, within the group of racism. And she has found the niche, which is somebody that is not hijacking blackness, so to speak, because like I said, that is not really a true thing, but somebody that can pretty much piggyback on the culture and to affect people that's around her immediate surroundings. So, and I don't think that she's going to be homeless for one minute either. So I don't believe those words at all. I think that's just propaganda once again to control people's minds. I doubt very seriously that woman is going to be homeless one day on the street. I doubt that. Not saying that it can't happen, but I don't think so.
Well, I do see a lot of acceptance of particular individuals, for example, who is what's the Fire and Ice, Rick James, the lady who sang with him,
mm-hmm.
or Fire and Desire.
Oh, mm-hmm. Tina Marie, yeah.
Tina Marie. There was a lot of acceptance of individuals like that within the so-called black diaspora, so something to consider, I think, but we don't have to stay on that. I just, some thoughts that were crossing my mind.
No, that was good, man. I mean, you know, like I said, I just keep it very, very basic. I mean, she is a white woman. She was raised by white parents. I mean... It's not like she was separated from them in any kind of manner where she had to feel the weight of basically falling into a classification. She's so-called chose it. So, you know, I don't know exactly what that means or what that is. Don't have enough evidence of that or seeing enough people to do that to kind of even have an opinion about it. I know that it can be very confusing. When you have people speak on it, and especially victims. I mean,
I will say this, not to cut you off. I will say from a trans from a transgender comparison or parallel, one thing from a trans white perspective, I think you said, you probably would say it that way, is...
I don't believe there's such thing as trans white, by the way. I don't think that a black person can ever fulfill whiteness in the sense of being classified as white.
Right, and that's why what you just said is so pertinent. The issue with trans in general is that, I don't want to get all of it mixed up. I know it's different sexual orientations, but you basically have to do a sex change, right? You have to do something extreme because if you are, and I don't want to mix all of it up, but I think if you're born a girl and you want to be a boy or vice versa, mm-hmm. you know, there's hormonal things you can do to your body, et cetera. To be accepted as how you feel, how you think, or how your chemistry makeup is. And you can debate the politics of that or the whatever. Anyway, not to get into that too deep, but from a trans white perspective, that's happening all over the planet. From skin lightening creams in Asia, in Africa, and in the Americas, from hair straightening, from blue eye contacts, from making yourself, your speech, your language, divesting of your ancient cultures, et cetera. So I think that word is a fascinating word from a political perspective, especially if you're going to write an article, if you're going to do experimentation. I think that word would be very powerful because I think it does express non-white people attempting a sex change, in a sense, to be accepted. And there's a lot of complexities in everything, you know, when it comes down to that stuff, as far as gender is concerned. But it's fascinating from a cultural perspective, or just from a power dynamic position, that because you're in the place that you're in, and you deify, in a sense, whiteness, many people do, and then you express it by being as European as possible, be it clothes you wear, or be it what you do to your skin, augmentations, nose changes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we've been seeing this for a long time, and there really is no word for it. People say stuff like, you know, there's different, you know, maybe cone, I don't know. There's words made for it, but trans white might be the most effective word. Not to stay on it too much, but you did trigger a thought in my mind just about watching non-whites and the psychological, which I think is in the title, just the psychological damage that being under a group that aspires, you know, or pushes on people, and then people adapt what they call whiteness. So if it was other things, you know, we would be trying to be like that. But this is fascinating because it's based off of skin color. And so people are literally changing their physiology to fit. And as you said earlier, you can't do that. It's almost like a boy trying to be a girl. It's like you kind of, you know, you can do whatever you need to do, but it's very difficult to switch. It's basically almost impossible. And when you do switch, in many cases, when you see the person, you see it. You see that you're trying to be this, even though physically, unfortunately, even though inside of you, you may be saying you're one thing, but physically on the external, you know, you are what you are. And it's funny that no matter how you do it, you know, a Sammy Sosa type person who lightens themselves, it is an interesting, I'm telling you, it's an interesting word, actually.
You know, another thing to kind of reiterate the point is that it just shows you that it is a very, very white thing for her to do. The group that is not able to exclude, which is us, which is fully inclusive, that we're subordinate to, we don't have the ability to kick out anybody. So if some laws change tomorrow,
it proves whiteness.
Yeah, it proves white supremacy. Yeah, it's like a very, very white. It's a very, very white thing to do when you think about the ability to impose on that, because there's been plenty of black people that's classified as black that have tried to throw in that white card I have done the military. I have done all kinds of things. I have killed for you people. I have done everything except me, like you would accept anybody that is white. I'm like you. I'm even 50-50. I even got a white parent.
Trans white. And I'm gonna tell you,
Dr. Welsing, we don't make that decision though. That's what's so funny about it. We still don't make that decision as a group, our group. See, because if blackness was to really mean the truth, if we was able to self define ourselves, then we could say, Rachel, you're out. You can't even say something like that because nobody would believe it. It doesn't hold any weight. But clearly it does. She gets all kinds of press from it. She gets pub from who? You know, the media that is ran by white people. Her group, which she has basically become some form of person that's right. So I mean, you know, like I said, at the end of the day, it is a very, very white thing to do. Even though within her own mind she may feel like she's attacking the system as a whole. You know, ain't nothing like white woman's tears to soothe.
And we always say, you know how you say reading is more important than watching television, as Gus would say. Studying white people is more important than a lot of things. I don't know what to insert there, but studying their behavior, and Dr. Welsing talks about people like, talks about the white society and how it wants to get acceptance from older cultures, Asia, Africa, et cetera. Like they have some issue, maybe because they're new on the planet, maybe because they're the minority on the planet, maybe because they have, you know, fears of genetic annihilation, they have fears of being wiped off the planet, that's kind of a strange reaction that they have when they interact with culture. So it's interesting just watching their behavior, historically speaking. And she definitely expresses their behavior patterns. That's why I kept saying what I was saying about her specifically. Mm-hmm.
You had anything, T, before we move on to like one of the last categories?
No, we didn't have this harp on that, but I just thought it was a very interesting comment.
No, that was good, man. That's good. I hope we didn't cause more confusion, but yeah, that's one of those where, like I said, you just have to be like, we don't do the classifying. And that does seem like a very, very white thing to do at the end of the day. And I guess that goes into when will whiteness end? And that is one of those questions where, you know, when does the definition, how flexible does the definition become? Are we in a situation where the definition, we may see the definition flex a little bit, just basically based off what you guys just stated? Man, I think it's dangerous, but like I said, I'm a victim of racism, white supremacy. You know, at the end of the day, they're definitions. You know, they put in work to dominate the planet, and that's pretty much what it is right now at this particular point. All we can do now is study and follow the logic as far as like how things look.
Are you trying to say there's no solutions? Are we gonna get you on record on live stream on YouTube, on Black Talk Radio Network?
It's still Black History Month, man. You're wrong for that. I'm claiming my Black History card right now. Boom. Let me get that. I got to get that cell phone. You ain't going to get me on record saying that there's no solutions. There's a solution to the system. I mean, that's what we're here for. We're here to try to break code. But I would say that the way it looks right now, the way the victims are examining the system, we're not countering the system.
But we'll say this, right? From a solutions perspective, if someone is given solutions to white supremacy, they are a con. It's a con. And the reason why I say that is that from a code breaker perspective, when you're trying to break code, just to use a computer example, and you haven't broken the code yet, you don't get to say you solved the code just because it's been ongoing. And someone says, well, have you solved the problem yet? I have not. That's how it should be phrased, right? It shouldn't be, you know, what's the solution?
The trouble ticket is still out. it's like you got a trouble ticket for racism, you know. Like, I mean, in this day has been going on for almost 500-600 years now. We got this trouble ticket out. And, you know, we keep coming back talking about, well, we solved it. I got the answer. I got the keys. And it still keeps coming back, return to sender. Nah, you got to take that back, bro.
I was just making a point, not to be too silly with the word solution, but, and I'm not playing with black folks. I'm just making a point that I think it's just phrased incorrectly. Is there micro solutions as far as behavior, as far as trying to get understanding, trying to gather resources, trying to take what little economics we do have and trying to do something with that? Absolutely. But from a white power perspective, you know, we're working on the problem. So don't ask me about solutions when I'm working on a problem. You have a complex mathematical problem to solve, right? We go back not too far back. What's the guy's name? Is it Eisenhower? Is that his name?
Oppenheimer,
is that what his name? When you're trying to split atoms, you know, you look at the complexity of that. And is the generals coming to you saying, hey, "Look, have you solved this problem yet?" Is, you know, you, when you're working on something, you tend to speak of it differently. Mm-hmm. So when someone says they have solutions to white power, it should expose them. Because either they're extremely, extremely ignorant, or they think that you are a fool. Those are the only two choices you get. But I'll stop right there.
Man.
Well, I think the solution is actually, because racism, white supremacy is a doctrine, it's an ideology, and it's a religion. So the question is, how does one go about breaking down religious dogma and doctrine? That's a very difficult thing to do.
Yes, sir.
We know that amongst ourselves, both of you gentlemen, we know that it's hard to break away from the church. I'm just talking about within the so-called black community. It's hard for people to break away from the church. I mean, you have people who may not agree with what's being said on Sundays, but they still feel that drive and almost like an obligation to go every Sunday and say, well, you know, we gotta support pastor, you know, with church is going through hard times, we have to go. And so I think any solution would be, this is just my opinion, obviously, but I think it would be better directed toward addressing solutions in a manner that points directly to breaking down religious doctrine and people's ideologies that are wrapped up in that. Like I said, very, very, very difficult thing to do because, you know, so-called black people and so-called white people are indoctrinated two different sides of the dichotomy in a way that that counter each other. And so arguing within that, it is a false dichotomy. So you already are set up into a conversation that is essentially going to go nowhere if you can't see outside of what's already been put in front of you. So you've already been put into a restrictive kind of arena to battle it out. And anything outside of that arena, if you think of it like a UFC match, anything outside of that cage is basically a spectator sport. I don't care what you're saying. People inside the ring, they feel like you are egging them on because likely they hear the roar of the crowd, but they can't make out individual voices when you're inside the ring. And so I think that's a good illustration of what we're dealing with. What do you guys think?
No, I agree. And I guess we can give our closing thoughts. For the listeners out there, like I said, thank you for allowing three confused victims that are trying to figure it out. Hopefully, just like you guys are. And like we said, man, I mean, the reason why we call it, you know, ourselves the Code Breakers, because we look at the system as a big maze, of systems that are set up to mistreat primarily those that are not classified as white. But see, the tricky thing about this particular system is that it's built to mistreat everyone, and that includes white people. So technically, everybody's a victim in this system. So what do I mean when we talk about the system being white supremacy? White supremacy is the vehicle that's used to implement the overall domination over all groups of people. It's the vehicle that's used. So back to what Mr. Reed was talking about, the word capital, you know, back to the founding father of this country, he spoke about capital being basically forced labor for our human bodies. Those people were part of African tribes and mixed in with European ancestry. Those people ended up becoming our ancestors. Those people ended up becoming black folk. So that has a direct correlation to us that's speaking on this program right now. We are those people. We fall out of the classification. You sexed in, you sex right back out again. So at the end of the day, the destination of blackness still upholds in this confusing system. So no, I mean, there is no solutions at this particular point. The global ticket of racism and white supremacy is still out. Go ahead, Paradise. Go ahead and close this out.
No, I wouldn't. I'm gonna let you do that. I just wanted to say, you said the word solutions again, and when you looked at from a mathematical perspective, people should get to kind of look at some of that logic. They kind of get clarity on when something is solved, something manifests simultaneously.
And it's okay too.
Yeah, it's okay. But when you crack an equation, you won't be talking about solutions. Does that make sense?
Well, you get to doing it.
You can't do it right. It'll be happening.
Right.
And so it's a setup when that word gets used, because when something is solved, it's not expressed that way. So if you look into expressions and equations, things of that nature, you kind of get an idea of sort of what I'm talking about. And so when events take place in a resolution or a solution, not to play with words too much, once that happens, then things immediately manifest and start to work or instantly works, right? So it is interesting, because you think about nuclear warfare, and once you split the atom, then look at the chain reaction from that. So once you solve, look at how events take place when you so-called solve something. And that could be, and that might even be something very simple, like, I'm going to use a terrible example, because it just kind of came to my head. I'm just kind of winging it here, so you may have to help me out. But even if you're with your other half, and a lot of things are happening, and you may, you know, have some fun interaction with them, you know what I'm saying? And it may solve something, and you tend not to talk about the solution because you're enacting it. Does that make sense?
Right.
I don't want to get too sexual with it, but like you're enacting it. So
right.
it's almost an instant thing, in the sense that you're not walking around telling your wife or your girl like, yo, I'm trying to solve this problem,
mm-hmm.
right? You put work in, or she put work in, and just think of it in those type of, and that's a very simplistic example, but when someone talks about solution, it's tricky in a sense, but it's debatable, of course. It's very debatable, but I always think that action and some other things will make that event take place. And then in hindsight, you can study the solution, historically speaking. But I think when you're doing, like you were saying, when you're kind of thinking about even Nat Turner, now when you're doing, that's sort of the problem itself solving. Mm-hmm. But solving is a solution, or using the word solving, it's sort of a living event. You know, it's not a simplistic type of, well, what's the solution? Like that phrase, in my opinion, is a bit invalid unless you're taking a test in school and they give you the problem and then that's the question that they put in there. But that's not what this is. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
And I think Beautiful. We kind of get, you know, we talk about words all the time and how words can trap and it does things to your mind, and it also, people use the word solution a lot to shut you down. You know, they use a lot of language, but us dealing with each other, we have to kind of be careful with some things that we say, because it is, and I would say it's not even on purpose. It's a trigger. It could even be a form of security or safety. A lot of times, when you've been victimized, especially for centuries, you have a lot of built-in reflexes and responses to protect yourself and to protect your group. And I think a lot of things, unfortunately, that we have to do is because of that. And a lot of times, words are thrown out there, or phrases or questions are used because it's fear. I'm not saying that's what it is, but again, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not an expert here. But I think that possibly is one thing that is taking place. But I kind of leave it there with that word.
Well, thanks for listening to the Code Breakers. And I am D.
This is Paradox.
This is T.
And until next time, peace.